diplomacy points. Building level 1. One thing was clear to Richter. He needed more blueprints. While the building bonuses might be modest, they certainly added up. Even the level 0 buildings, or huts, gave a definite bonus to the village. The plus 5% to recuperation after injury was something every guard would appreciate in the days to come. Before he could examine the interface any further, another prompt appeared in his vision. Know this. As master of this place of power and village, you are bound to your settlement. As with all rulers, your character, abilities, and soul will affect your land and your people. Your limitless ability applies to the buildings that your settlement can use. Your village is not limited by race, alignment, or any other specifics in the buildings which it can benefit from. Purchase and procure building schematics to construct better buildings. We shape our buildings, thereafter they shape us.
Richter read the prompt again.
Silence reigned for a few moments with Randolphus looking at him. Then he looked up. I want the buildings repaired. After a moment's thought, he clarified. I want them moved from the hill to the inside of the village, then I want them repaired.
I am not sure that is possible, my lord, Randolphus said, frowning.
I also want them to be examined and blueprints to be made, Richter said, ignoring any possibility of his will not being done. He looked at his chamberlain, and the pain that he had pushed down for a moment carried through.
I need this to be done, man. The goblin encampment had to be dealt with, but we paid a high price. If we can salvage these buildings, it gives a bit more meaning to our people's sacrifice. Help me honor our fallen.
There was a quiet desperation in his voice. Randolphus looked back at him, understanding something about what Richter was feeling that the Chaos Seed didn't even grasp himself. His liege didn't just need to protect himself and his people. Richter needed to make the battle and the deaths that it had caused mean something. He said the only thing he could.
It will be done, my liege. It is my honor to serve.
Good, Richter breathed out, nodding. That's good. The relief in his voice was obvious, and Randolphus was reminded just how much his liege cared about his people. After having served many callous men that had deigned to call themselves lords, it was almost too good to be true to once again serve a man who valued the lives of those beneath him. A prompt appeared in Richter's vision. Your desire to serve your people as well as rule them has moved, Randolphus. You have gained plus 731 relationship points. Total relationship points, plus 20,517. Congratulations! Your relationship with Randolphus has improved from admiring, plus 10,000, to steadfast, plus 20,000. I know I can rely upon you.
Richter's eyes widened in surprise. Before he could speak, Randolphus went down on one knee and said, Through service, ascendance.
The Chaos Seed reached out a hand and laid it on his friend's shoulder, finishing the motto of the village. Through dedication, transcendence. Randolphus raised his head and looked Richter in the eye. There was an intensity to his gaze that the Chaos Seed had not seen before. The Chamberlain's voice was strong.
I am truly honored to serve you, my lord. I do not make promises that I cannot keep, and I have learned that the future is promised to no man. Please know that today I am thankful to be in your service. Long may you reign.
Richter blinked, both flattered by Randolphus's words and taken aback by his sincerity.
Thank you, he said simply as the man stood.
They held each other's gaze for another second, then Randolphus looked as if he had come to a decision. He started shuffling his papers. If Richter didn't know better, he would think the unflappable man was nervous. Randolphus pulled a page out from the stack of papers.
There are a few other matters to address, my lord. We should have just enough time to cover them all before the ceremony.
Chapter 10, Day 141, Kuborn 31, 0 AOC.
The next thing Randy let him know was that more had been found on the hill than just buildings. A large number of weapons and armor had been transported from the goblin stores. Most of it was extremely low quality and had scant durability remaining, unfortunately, but it might still have some utility as scrap.
The Chamberlain said he had already arranged to have it taken to the Forge of Heavens for smelting. One building was thought to have been an armory, though, because it had items of higher quality, and even three enchanted weapons. The Chamberlain handed Richter a sheet of paper with an inventory.
High Steel Goblin Cleaver, plus 2. Damage, 12 to 15. Durability, 35 of 41. Item class, uncommon. Quality, well-crafted. Weight, 1.2 kilograms. Traits, plus 2 damage. Auriculum Round Shield of Rust. Defense, 11. Durability, 64 of 64. Item class, unusual. Quality, well-crafted. Weight, 3.3 kilograms. Traits. Each charge released from this shield will cause 0.3 points of durability damage to the weapon that strikes it. Works only against metal weapons. Charges, 97 of 97. High Steel Warhammer of Soul Trap. Damage, 16 to 20. Durability, 38 of 44. Item class, uncommon. Quality, above average. Weight, 3.5 kilograms. Traits. Any creature struck by this weapon is afflicted with the spell Soul Trap for 5 seconds.
The plus 2 damage enchantment was more than useful. It was a static enchantment. Static enchantments were superior to active in that they weren't dependent on charges. They were inferior in other ways, of course. The magic on Richter's Elementum Blade was far more powerful than just plus 2 damage, for instance. His weapon both imparted sonic damage with each strike and possessed the capability to disarm his opponents. The downside was that every time the enchantment was unleashed, it used up charges. If the charges were completely depleted, the weapon was, for all intents and purposes, just a regular sword until the enchantments built back up or were restored with filled soul gems. In contrast, the attribute boosts on his armor were an excellent example of powerful static enchantments, which never ran out. He hadn't understood the real difference between static and active at first. It had helped a great deal when Glorin, the other village enchanter, had explained the difference between enchantment levels and enchantment ranks. Active enchantments could achieve higher ranks, meaning they would increase in strength concordant with a rise in rank. Reaching rank 2 for his freeze enchantment had increased the base cold damage his weapon imparted from plus 1 to plus 2. It had also made it more likely for the weapon's freeze effect to trigger, something that could turn part or all of an enemy's body to ice for a short time. Another important factor regarding static enchantments was cost. Put simply, they cost more. Every enchantment Richter could add onto a piece of armor or a weapon had a base cost that had to be paid with captured souls. His freeze enchantment, for example, had a base cost of 3. The first rank cost 3 soul points, the second rank 6 points, then 12, then 21, 33, etc. The static enchantment plus 1 damage, on the other hand, cost more initially, requiring 5 soul points. It added exactly the same damage to a weapon as the first rank of freeze, but without the added effect of turning an opponent to ice. Another large difference between static and active enchantments was that the former were immune to one of the Forge of Heaven's most prolific abilities. When most people learned an enchantment, they could only imbue an item with it at that specific rank. If you were taught fire damage rank 3, then you could only enchant weapons at rank 3. The Forge allowed you to learn other ranks. Each time Richter learned a new enchantment, it was rank 1, but the more he practiced it, there was a chance that he could learn the next rank. He was currently up to rank 5 with freeze. The static enchantments, unfortunately, were not susceptible to the Forge's ranking ability. The three that were known by the Forge were plus 1 damage, plus 10% durability, and plus 2 defense. The only way for the Forge to learn more was to find more enchanted gear unless Richter found a way to gain more through his specialty. Hopefully, Hafiz's sons would be back from their trading trip soon with more enchanted items. In the meantime, it was nice to have the option of adding another light to the Elementum Anvil. Enchantment levels were completely different than ranks. All the enchantments he knew were level 1, or weak. They apparently followed a similar progression to spells. Weak, minor, inferior, improved, strong, potent, superior, powerful, and grand.
He was currently investing mana into his essence specialty to unlock his first minor enchantment, the second level of Sonic Attack. Glorin had told him that higher-level enchantments could manifest in any number of ways, but they were almost always powerful. They came with greater requirements, but were worth the cost. While the cleaver would be useful, the Shield of Rust also piqued his interest. During the goblin raid, Calder's training of the guards had saved many lives. Forming a shield wall had let them withstand a numerically superior force. Richter was already envisioning a line of shields enchanted with the Rust enchantment. If his people held out long enough, the weapons of their foes would literally fall apart. Even if the enemy's swords and maces were not completely destroyed, a loss of durability would lower the damage they could inflict considerably. It was the third item that really caught his attention. Despite the fact that it was only uncommon rarity, unlike the unusual rarity of the shield, it had an enchantment that he had wanted for a while. Soul Trap. As an essence enchanter, he could purchase the enchantment of any spell he knew. That cost precious talent points, though. Now, with any luck, he wouldn't have to spend them. Randolphus told him that no other worthwhile object had been found, but this wasn't a surprise. It was the understatement of the century, but they had left the field of battle in a hurry. Yoshi had laid claim to the gear of the goblin commander Ragjor as a prize, something that Richter didn't begrudge him. The warrior half-sprite had slain the barbarian in single combat. It had been physically impossible to loot many of the goblins' bodies, as they had still been cocooned in the web traps when the allied forces had quit the field. The second goblin army that had been rushing towards them had been even bigger than the first one they had defeated. The priority had been to protect the freed prisoners, not to strip the dead of anything valuable. Richter handed the weapons and armor summary back to Randolphus, telling him to bring the enchanted items to the forge in the morning. With any luck, the Forge of Heavens would learn three new enchantments. The Chamberlain took the paper back and promptly handed Richter another. It was a list of sundry items that had also been recovered. A few potions, some trash jewelry, none of it was noteworthy. The one saving grace was that a small chest had been found under a collapsed bit of wood. The thorough Chamberlain had already counted and assessed the contents. Richter's eyebrows rose. "Is this right?" Randolphus sniffed, as if affronted by the very possibility that his figures would be off. "Undoubtedly, my lord." Richter looked back down at the page, slightly amused at the Chamberlain's miffed attitude. It showed the actual contents of the chest, and then converted them into gold pieces for ease of understanding. 472 copper coins, valued at 4.72 gold. 305 silver coins, valued at 30.5 gold. 14 silver bands, valued at 14 gold. 2 silver weights, valued at 5 gold. 68 gold coins, valued at 68 gold. 4 gold weights, valued at 100 gold. Richter had only seen bands once before when trading with Hafiz, the grandfatherly merchant in law. He had later learned that the sweet old man act was, well, an act, and the white-bearded bastard was actually a professed traitor. Richter had ground his teeth at the time. He thought he'd done well at the bargaining table, but the truth was that he'd probably been taken to the cleaners. What made it worse was that he hadn't even realized it. It was kind of like bragging about sleeping with a hot chick and then discovering you were only her third stop of the night. He had asked Randolphus about it once, quoting the prices he had paid for certain items. Afterward, he had asked if the Chamberlain thought those had been fair prices. The man had opened his mouth, then slowly closed it, and after a bout of extremely fake-sounding coughing, had walked away, claiming he needed to get a glass of water. Still, Richter had made his peace with it. Mostly. The point was, the finger-length strips of metal called bands were worth 10 coins of the same amount. He hadn't seen weights before, but Randy's calculations let him deduce that each weight was worth... Richter looked up quickly. "A weight is worth 25 coins?" "Yes, my lord," Randolphus said, as if it was the most obvious thing in the world. "Then that means..." Richter said to himself as he looked back down at the paper. He flipped to the next page and whistled softly. "We gained 222 gold?"
"And 2 silvers and 2 coppers, my lord,"
Randolphus corrected, exacting as ever.
Richter blinked.
His village had just gained the equivalent of $22,200. That didn't even include the value of the loot they had obtained. Most workers only earned 4 to 5 silvers every fortnight. Put another way, they only made $50 every 2 weeks. That was if they were lucky. He had just gained a fortune.
His heart started beating faster, and his excitement soared.
That was when he remembered that the money had not been free. It had been paid for in blood. More than 100 lives had been spent to gain this wealth. His mood fell, but he didn't fall into the trap of self-recrimination as he once might have.
Richter just reminded himself to never forget the human cost of progress.
Alma nuzzled his hand, bringing a faint smile to his face and a small degree of lightness to his suddenly heavy heart. He focused back on Randolphus. He had responsibilities, and there was work to be done. With a somber voice, he asked, "What is the overall state of the treasury now?"
Randolphus handed over another sheet of paper. While Richter read, the Chamberlain recited from memory. "Not including the spoils from the raid, the treasury now stands at 2,751 gold coins, 2 gold bands, 4,386 silver coins, 11,306 copper coins, 84 iron bits."
"Iron bits?" Richter interrupted.
"Yes, my lord," Randolphus answered absently. When he saw his liege's questioning glance, though, he clarified. "Iron bits are a form of currency used by commoners. As much of your money came from selling jewels, you would most likely not have come across them. The coins are too small a denomination to normally be seen outside of rural areas or the poorest ghettos of the cities. 10 iron bits are worth 1 copper coin. Richter nodded in understanding, and the Chamberlain continued. "The treasury also contains 5,234 cobalt silvers. The cobalt silvers should be able to be traded at a 1-to-1 ratio for gold. With that, and including the spoils from the raid, the Mist Village has the equivalent of 8,758 gold, 9 silvers, and 7 coppers in hard currency." The Chaos Seed's eyes widened at hearing how much wealth he had amassed. It was more than most workers would ever earn in a lifetime. Back in the game, it would have been the equivalent of almost $1 million. He was sitting pretty, but he also knew how quickly that wealth could vanish. While the village was doing fine right now, there would inevitably be expenses as they grew. Even low-level spell books could cost 12 gold or more. The blood that had been used to make his dragon's cauldron had cost him over 600. Richter would have to purchase resources that weren't available in his area, buy devices that they couldn't make themselves, and plan for the likely hundreds of other expenditures that would arise. The village economy wasn't something he could ignore any longer. Randolphus continued, "We have 47 pieces of Tefanim jewelry, which we should be able to sell for between 15,000 and 30,000 gold. We also have 13 duplicate Dark Khan coins that could be sold, but I would advise against it."
Richter nodded in agreement. The Dark Khan coins were also cobalt silver, but were vastly more valuable due to the fact that they were part of a quest. Supposedly, finding one of each Dark Khan coin would lead to an ancient kobold treasure or power. According to Randolphus, murder and torture were a common part of the history of such coins. Best not to reveal that he had them unless absolutely necessary. At least, best not to reveal it again, an error that the Chamberlain had no problem reminding him of at that very moment.
"My lord, I know you showed the coins to Abbas and his brothers, but I must remind you that wars have been fought over what is in this village. The core buildings, the quickening, the Dark Khan coins. We must be wary of others finding out about the treasures located here. I believe you will find that the 5-foot wall around the village is a poor defense indeed against a determined army. To that point,"
Randolphus put his papers down and looked his liege in the eyes,
"is that a dungeon on the hill?"
Richter didn't really know why his Chamberlain was being so intense.
"It is? Is that a problem? Hisako told me the dungeons were special, but it's not as powerful as the Forge of Heaven or the Dragon's Cauldron, right?
And there's no way that it could be as special as a celestial tree like the Quickening."
"You make a valid point, my lord,"
the Chamberlain responded.
The concern in his voice belied the statement, however. As I have already said, this village has a quite frankly mind-boggling amount of treasure. Core buildings are mostly spoken of in the abstract. Everyone knows that they exist, but no commoner and even most lords would ever imagine they could possess one. The quickening is even harder to believe in. It is a legend come to life. I doubt there is another such tree in all the land, and I am almost completely certain there are no other celestial trees in the River Peninsula. Dungeons are something altogether different, however, and may bring us notoriety that these other wonders have not. Every boy and girl is raised on stories of adventure and treasure. While they could never conceive of seeing, let alone owning, a core building, almost every denizen of the land will fight and kill to reach a dungeon, and every adventurer will have heard the call.
With that pronouncement, Randolphus did something that caught Richter completely off guard. He stood and lifted the bottom of his shirt. Under the black tunic, the Chamberlain was sporting washboard abs. Richter was about to awkwardly compliment him and then ask what the hell was going on, but after a moment, a silvery square appeared in the center of his chest. It was a maze, and as Richter stared at the symbol, the lines shifted as if he were seeing deeper and deeper into a confusing network of tunnels without end. The Chaos Seed had seen a mark like it before, on his own chest. Both he and Randolphus had the mark of the adventurer. There were slight differences to the Chamberlain's tattoo, but there was no mistaking the similarity.
"You're an adventurer?" Richter asked.
Over the past several months, it had become abundantly clear to him that his proper Chamberlain was more than just a valet. He hadn't forced the matter, though, because, well, honestly, because Randolphus was invaluable, and Richter doubted he could run the village without him. Randy hesitated for a moment, but then answered strongly.
"The Kingdom of Eve has more than one dungeon. The strongest is in the middle of law. I gained the mark the first time I entered."
"There is a dungeon in the capital city?" Richter asked incredulously.
"Yes. The palace is built directly above it. The dungeon, having been built atop the royal family's place of power, is one of the secrets to their long-standing power and success. For centuries, members of the royal family have risked the dangers of the Hall of Elemental Hunters to gain wealth and power. It has made them strong and healthy, and given their lives unnatural longevity. The king would disappear for days at a time occasionally. He required that I accompany him now and again."
Randolphus had been the personal advisor to the old king. The ruler asking him to stay by his side was a perfectly plausible explanation for having the mark. Still, Richter looked at the man's nonplussed face for a few moments, then just replied, "Uh-huh." Randolphus didn't so much as twitch an eyelid.
"As such, I can provide valuable information about the inner workings of dungeons. I would appreciate it if you would grant me access to this dungeon, my lord. In that way, I will be able to serve you in the same way as the old king."
"Not a bad idea," Richter responded slowly, continuing to stare at Randolphus's almost remarkably passive face. "I'm sure you know that dungeons can be dangerous for a non-combatant, though."
"I do have some skill defending myself, my lord,"
Randolphus replied levelly. The two men continued to stare at one another, and a feeling of disquiet began to grow in Richter's chest. Questions that he had willfully ignored for months came flooding into his mind. He trusted Randolphus, or at least he always had, but hairs were rising on the back of his neck. Just what was it that the Chamberlain was hiding? What was in his past that had given him skills like code-breaking? As he stared into the Chamberlain's eyes, the weight of the battle, the deaths of his people, and the responsibilities he carried all combined to make him feel like he had a boulder on his shoulders. His jaw began to clench. He needed to know. People lived and died based on his decisions every day. How could he make those decisions well if he didn't even know the truth about the man he relied on the most? Randolphus had been amazing and indispensable, but the time for blissful ignorance had passed. Alma picked up on his mood and stalked forward on the bed. Her tail switched back and forth as she looked at the Chamberlain.
"Don't do anything, my love," he thought to her, "but be ready."
When Richter finally spoke, it was in a slow and steady tone. His voice was weary, but sure.
Randolphus, I know that I could not have done all this without you. I am thankful, but I also know you have secrets in your past. You have more power in this village than anyone save myself. To be clear, I have no complaints as to how you have used it, but I have the lives of hundreds of people in my hands. Men and women have died because of my orders. Our list of enemies is growing, and I cannot afford to keep giving you my trust if you won't give me yours in return. Randolphus drew in a breath as if to speak, but Richter didn't stop. I have never really questioned you, but it's obvious you were more than just a servant to the old King of Eve. You were more than just a valet. One thing has become clear to me since coming to the land. The choices you make sculpt you in a very real way. After walking through halls of power, there is no way you remained untouched. He said the next three words slowly and deliberately. Who are you? His face remained impassive, but inside, he hoped and prayed that his newly risen relationship with Randolphus would keep this conversation from descending into violence. The Chamberlain blinked twice. Then, in a low voice, he replied, I do trust you, my lord. If you truly want an answer, however, my words are for you and you alone. His eyes flickered to the guard standing just outside the room. The meaning was clear. If Richter wanted an answer, the guard would have to leave. It was Richter's turn to blink and consider. Did he send away his only support in a potentially dangerous situation? Did he send away the only witness to what might turn into an unpleasant situation? The Chaos Seed looked at the secretive man in front of him and went with his gut. Secrets or no, Randolphus had been loyal and true to him. And he remembered his own words. How could he expect the man to trust him if he didn't extend trust himself? Raising his voice, he called out, Guard! The man stepped smartly into the room, and with a last glance at Randolphus, Richter gave an order. Go check on my weapons and armor. Bring them if they are ready, but don't have anyone replace you at your post. I need to speak to my chamberlain alone. His guard clapped a fist to his chest in salute and moved off at a jog. His chainmail armor jingled as he moved, and soon the sound faded away. While the two men waited for privacy, Richter's hand inched towards his pillow. Ever since his murder and castration at the hands of the assassin Sonore, he was never far from a weapon. A high steel dagger, enchanted with freeze, lay sheathed under his pillow. As they looked at one another, Richter took a moment to analyze the man sitting across from him. Name, Randolphus. Race, human. Disposition, trusting. Level 19. Active effects, present and unknown. Stats. Health, 210. Mana, 140. Stamina, 350. Attributes. Strength, 12. Agility, 22. Dexterity, 23. Constitution, 24. Endurance, 23. Intelligence, 21. Wisdom, 17. Charisma, 16. Luck, 14. Description. Humans are one of the shortest-lived but most prolific breeders in the land. Humans have a broader affinity for skills than other races. No special bonuses to race. Humans get 4 points to distribute per level. Randolphus was only one level shy of gaining a profession. Richter had checked in the past, but the man had come far since then. This wasn't a surprise, as everyone in the village had leveled with the growth of the quickening and the reemergence of the celestial pixies. There was nothing to make Richter suspicious of what he saw. Even the Chamberlain's stat points seemed to have been distributed equally across all of his characteristics. Nothing in the profile raised any red flags at all, with one exception. Richter's analyze skill had leveled after examining the hundreds of prisoners released from the goblin encampment. Reaching skill level 15 had added a new capability. He could now see buffs, debuffs, and other active effects of those he used his skill on. The prisoner's active effects had been a predictable mix of exhaustion, dehydration, malnutrition, and an assortment of diseases, injuries, and other negative effects. Despite having used Analyze on thousands of people, he hadn't seen anything like what he was seeing on Randolphus's status page.
When he focused on present and unknown, a further explanation appeared.
Your skill in analyze is insufficient to identify any current effects on Randolphus, but is sufficient to recognize the presence of one or more unknown effects.
You may stop using your identification skill upon me, my lord. It will not truly work unless I allow it,
Randolphus said in his cultured but tired-sounding voice.
Richter tried to hide his surprise, but knew he'd probably failed. No one had ever detected him using his analyze skill before.
It didn't require an incantation or any hand movements, so how did Randolphus know?
Before Richter could ask, one of the Chamberlain's eyes twitched and he said, You will most likely have better luck now.
Before Richter's very eyes, Randolphus's face changed. He was the same man, but his features became rougher. His bearing was more dominant, and his eyes were predatory in a way that Richter had never seen before.
Randolphus seemed to exude an aura of danger that had not been present just a moment ago. It was as if a sheer cloth had been removed from a statue, revealing the powerful visage beneath. Richter realized that all he had seen in the past was a mere shadow of the man he was seeing now. His ears were slightly pointed, not like an elf's, with one sharp upturned point, but instead like they formed a pentagon with curved angles. They sat somewhat flat against his head, and at a right angle. To Richter, they looked like the graceful sweep of a fish's side fins. Randolphus's skin also had a slight bluish cast, most notably in his lips.
Strangely, looking at the man without whatever illusion he had just shed made Richter want to trust him even more than before. The energy radiating off him was both intoxicating and reassuring. Randolphus spoke, and the voice had the same cultured tone, but was commanding in a way the Chaos Seed hadn't heard it before.
Use your skill again now, Lord Richter.
The Chaos Seed's hand was now firmly clasped around the hilt of his hidden dagger, but he did as Randolphus suggested. Alma's wings were flared and the spines on her neck had risen. She stared intently at the Chamberlain, ready to unleash hell if he threatened her master. Richter's eyes widened in shock at what he could now see.
Chapter 11, Day 141, Qu'Born 31, 0 AOC. Name, Randall Phineas. Race, half-human, half-undine. Profession, rogue. Disposition, trusting. Level, 47. Specialty, spy. Focus, counterintelligence. Stats. Health, 581. Mana, 412. Stamina, 353. Attributes. Strength, 29. Agility, 54. Dexterity, 52. Constitution, 43. Endurance, 32. Intelligence, 36. Wisdom, 57. Charisma, 59. Luck, 57. Description. Racial blends are erratic in their disposition and powers. The offspring of such a union can inherit all or none of their parent race's characteristics. 1,000 questions flew into Richter's head. He didn't know what to ask about first. The man wasn't even human. It wasn't like the Chaos Seed had a problem with non-humans. If anything, the humans he'd met since coming to the land had a bigger chance of being a-holes. Still, that seemed like a really basic thing to let a guy know about. Looking at the man's stats, Richter saw that Randolphus's build was fairly well-balanced. It occurred to the Chaos Seed that it was somewhat strange applying game terms to real people, but the term build definitely still fit. That observation came and went quickly, though. There were too many hanging questions to give it more than a moment's thought. What was a focus? Exactly how many points did the Chamberlain get per level? What did his abilities and marks mean? Of course, that wasn't even the most striking thing. Randolphinius, Richter corrected himself, was level 47. 47! Richter hadn't met many who were that high a level before. Fewer still that weren't actively trying to kill him. The Chaos Seed had to hope that was still the case here. On top of all that, Randolphus was a spy?
And what the ever-loving hell was a focus?
Deciding he wanted an answer to his last question first, Richter opened his mouth to speak, but Randolphus beat him to the punch.
There are many things I have to say to you, Lord Richter, but foremost among them is this. I am sorry. I am sorry that I have deceived you. I am sorry that you had to ask me to reveal this secret to you. Many times I almost broached the subject.
He sighed and shook his head.
But the last several months have passed in a blur. Most of all, my lord, I am sorry that I allowed that woman to attack you so savagely.
There was real regret and remorse in his voice. It occurred to Richter that a spy could probably lie well enough to fool the devil himself, but still, he couldn't help but want to believe the man. Still, the content of what he was saying made Richter tighten his grip on the hilt of his enchanted dagger.
Are you telling me you conspired with the assassin to do—
He swallowed hard, his throat growing dry.
To do what she did to me?
If Randolph Phineas said yes, then only one of them would leave this room alive.
No,
the spy answered. An almost imperceptible amount of tension eased in Richter's shoulders, but his eyes still remained fierce and locked on the man sitting across from him. Randolph Phineas's voice was still sorrowful, and his gaze remained unwavering.
I did not know she was an assassin. I only knew that something did not quite add up about her. I told myself that it was due to the harsh abuse she said she had suffered at the hands of the mercenaries, a story we both now know was a complete falsehood.
Oh, Richter responded hollowly. The horrors of that night still made him break into a cold sweat. Knowing there wasn't some conspiracy did help a bit, though, and the beating of his heart eased.
I don't blame you for what happened. I was taken in by her damsel in distress act, too.
Randolph Phineas shook his head.
You do not understand. I am trained to detect such falsehoods. That is the very purpose of my focus. If I had not been so concerned with keeping my own secret, I would have seen through her lies.
He paused for a moment and sighed deeply.
I have not just been pretending to be Randolphus.
No matter how skilled an act, there are magics that can see through such deceptions. Sumiko's spell, for instance. He trailed off, looking at Richter meaningfully. The Chaos Seed blinked. Randolph Phineas had just admitted that he had been able to beat Sumiko's soul window spell. That spell was the primary way that he ensured the loyalty of everyone in the village. One of the questions that everyone answered was, "Do you mean Lord Richter any harm?" If the spy had been able to deceive the Life Master regarding some of the questions, then he definitely could have lied about that question as well. The two men looked at one another as Randolph Phineas read his face. The series of conclusions that Richter was drawing were inevitable and inescapable. The hand holding the hilt of the dagger grew slick with sweat. A cold pit formed in his stomach. Richter prepared himself, physically and emotionally, to plunge the blade into the chest of a man he had trusted almost above all others. The rogue recognized the murder in Richter's eyes, and he did nothing. The moment dragged out even longer. If the spy had made even the slightest of movements to attack or defend himself, the Chaos Seed would have attacked. Instead, the half-Undine just waited for whatever would come. A full minute passed until Richter commanded in a tightly controlled voice,
"Continue."
His gaze never wavering, Randolph Phineas spoke.
"I am able to conceal my identity so effectively, not because of my skills as a rogue or talents as a spy. I can do it because of my heritage. Water magic is the magic of change, illusion, and befuddlement. One of the gifts from my mother was an ability, Undine's deception, that allows me to become someone else. I do not pretend to be Randolphus. I actually transform into that identity."
"You can shape change?" Richter asked. If that were true, the Chamberlain was even more powerful than he had thought.
"No, Lord Richter. The change is not external, though there is clearly some of that as well," he responded, gesturing to his alien facial features. "The change I undergo is deep and internal. I can adopt the persona of a false identity so completely that almost nothing can pierce the falsehood. The physical change is only the smallest part of my ability."
Randolph Phineas's face grew regretful again before he continued.
The downside is that using my ability also reduces my capabilities. That is what I have to apologize for, my lord. That is my shame. If I had not been using my Undine's deception to actually become Randolphus, I would have been able to detect Sonore's falsehoods. I could have prevented Tarod's capture and saved you from the atrocious acts she committed. Because I was more concerned with protecting my own secrets, I cut myself off from my specialty and thereby lacked the ability to pierce her deception.
Randolph Phineas bowed his head, finally breaking eye contact, but not before Richter read the shame on his face. That, coupled with his sincere tone, made the Chaos Seed sigh. Relaxing ever so slightly, he made a suggestion.
Maybe you should start from the beginning.
Randolphus, or Randolph Phineas, nodded and began to speak.
I am older than I appear. The father of the current King of Eve was not only my liege, he was also my nephew.
With that bombshell, Richter's eyes widened. Now the guy was fucking royalty?
No, Lord Richter, said Randolph Phineas, easily reading his face. I can never sit atop the throne of Eve. Even if every other member of the bloodline dies, I agreed to an unbreakable gish 102 years ago. I have already told you that the royal palace was built upon a dungeon that was in turn built upon a place of power. The ley lines of fire, water, air, and earth intersect to form the nexus of powers. The dungeon reflects this. It is called the Hall of Elemental Hunters, and creatures strong in those four basic elements call it home. It is not widely known, the spy continued, that not all creatures which call a dungeon home are monsters. One day my father, the grandfather of the current king, was dungeon diving and came upon a lake of cool, clear water. The story goes that the air was warm. Steam rose from the surface of the water and the banks of the pool were covered in soft mosses and fragrant flowers. My father told me that it was one of the most serene and beautiful settings he had ever seen or would ever see. They would have distrusted it immediately, having found it in the labyrinth, but it was a Shambhala.
Shambhala? Richter asked.
Randolph Phineas sighed. There is much for you to learn, Lord Richter. Dungeons have many rules, as does the labyrinth as a whole. Some rules are transient. They can change and shift based on something as ephemeral as the position of the sun in the sky. Others, however, are sacrosanct and eternal. One of the oldest and most honored are the Shambhala. No violence will be perpetrated by the denizens of any dungeon, or even the labyrinth, against an adventurer in such a place. Similarly, any adventurer that causes harm while in a Shambhala will forever lose the mark of the adventurer and will gain the curse of the labyrinth.
And that is, Richter asked, pushing down the irritation he always had when people explained concepts with other unknown concepts.
I do not actually know, Lord Richter. No one I have ever known has been foolish enough to break the peace of a Shambhala or earn the curse in another way. It is said, however, that death is a welcome release from the torments it inflicts.
Richter nodded for him to continue.
The king's party had been diving through the labyrinth for days. They were nearing the end of their return journey, and the entrance to their dungeon was in sight when they were attacked by monsters both fell and numerous. They tried to retreat, but the enemy had chosen their ambush site well. The party was far from a node and had to fight their way to safety.
Richter wanted to ask another question, but decided not to interrupt.
Two of their members died in the opening salvo of the battle. Every surviving member was injured. Exhausted, low on potions and mana, they were lucky to find the Shambhala. After binding the worst of their wounds, they lost consciousness. And when they finally awoke, they saw something that they had never expected. The Shambhala was home to a small tribe of naiads.
Water nymphs, he clarified at seeing Richter's lack of comprehension.
Oh!
Richter exclaimed. Nymph was a word that he recognized. He doubted there was any red-blooded male, or too many geek females, that hadn't had a wistful daydream about finding a wood nymph that they could comfort. Randolph Phineas's bluish lips pulled back in a faint smile, and Richter caught a glimpse of his sharpened teeth. The Chaos Seed pulled back slightly, and an inch of the blade he still clenched cleared the scabbard before he could stop himself. Even with Randy's new, somewhat alien visage, he had started to relax. Those teeth weren't made for eating corn, though. They were made to rend flesh. Seeing Richter's reaction, the mirth left the half-Undine's face. He continued in a smooth and level voice.
One of the king's party members was so surprised that despite being in a Shamhala, he almost attacked when the Naiad touched his face. Luckily for him, he forestalled his sword strike. It didn't take long before all the adventurers were enjoying the comforts of the Naiad's tender mercies. If the king had been content to enjoy himself with his men, then I would most likely never have been born. But his arrogance was as legendary as his strength. The story goes that he strode out into the waters and called for the Queen Naiad to come and slake his thirst. Some versions of the telling even state that he dipped his manhood into the waters and shouted, "I am a grower and a shower. The coldness of these waters cannot shrink my spear."
Randall Phineas shook his head with a faint smile.
That may have been simple hyperbole, Lord Richter, but what is known is that something heard his boastful call and decided to teach a painful lesson to my arrogant father.
"I thought you said no one could harm anyone else in a Shamhala," Richter interrupted.
"There are more ways to enact revenge than simply harming someone, Lord Richter. At times, all that is required is to give them what they ask for."
There was no Queen Naiad, but the dungeon had evolved to the point that each power could manifest an avatar, a physical embodiment of a basic element. In this case, the water ley line appeared as a powerful Undine. The elemental took the form of a beautiful winged Naiad, and she lay with the king, fulfilling his every desire.
"Doesn't sound like much of a revenge," Richter said.
"Ah,"
Randall Phineas replied with the tone of a teacher. His face may have changed, but his voice was still pure aristocrat.
"So others have also thought. You must remember, however, that the powers of an Undine lie in illusion and misdirection. She enchanted the men of the party so that a single night of pleasure actually lasted an entire month. It is true that no harm can be perpetrated within a Shamhala, but such was the beauty of the Naiads that when the Undine asked each man a simple question, 'Can we please you forever?' they all acceded. Thrice she asked each of them, and thrice they agreed. As they stayed under the Undine's power of their own free will, the elemental's spell did not break the law of the labyrinth. I believe you may have already learned this lesson, but I shall repeat it nonetheless. In the land, your words have power. This is doubly true if said to a woman."
Richter nodded. He had indeed learned that lesson, and the second part about women was a lesson he'd learned too many times while still on Earth.
The king's party might have stayed there until they died, trapped in pleasure. Fortunately, as arrogant as the king was, he also engendered great loyalty. A cadre of adventurers loyal to him, specialists all, fought through the dungeon. They searched for weeks and finally found their liege. Once they entered the Shamhala, the enchantment was broken. The Naiads left the embrace of their lovers and dove back into the pool, disappearing forever. The cries of pleasure that had been echoing through the Shamhala turned to wails of sorrow and anger. Two of the king's party had died from neglect while under the Undine's enchantment. They had sought pleasure above even their own need to eat and drink. The others were malnourished. Despite their anger and weakness, it is said that they all still reached towards their disappearing lovers. One drowned himself in a river weeks later in the vain hope he might find his lost love. It was the king who suffered most, though, Randall Phineas finished.
Richter couldn't help but notice that a note of bitterness had worked its way into the round, pear-shaped tones of the man's voice.
The Undine revealed her true form a moment before leaving the king. What had been a beautiful woman of perfect proportions became a scaled humanoid with sharp teeth and a fish-like appearance. She spoke to him one final time as the Naiads fled, "Honor your vow." Then a body dissolved into water, and she was gone. Time passed, and the event was mostly forgotten. Death was a common occurrence in the labyrinth, after all. Also, the court quickly learned not to discuss the Undine, at least not within earshot of the king or his adventurers. One beheading was all that was required to teach that particular lesson. 1 year later, however, as the king was preparing to enter the dungeon, a hooded figure blocked his path. His fellow adventurers moved to attack, but the figure threw back a hood. When the king saw that it was the Undine, he stayed the attack. One of my father's close friends said that he saw the pain of lost love on the king's face, though he was never so foolish as to broach the topic directly. In the Undine's arms was a small bundle. She called out to the king, using the same words she'd used as a farewell a year before. Honor your vow. Now, the king may have forbidden open talk of the events at the Shambhala due to embarrassment, but he was not so foolish as to pretend it had not happened. He had spoken to his greatest advisers about what he could remember, and they, in turn, had searched the palace records for any hint of something similar occurring in the past. The scholars he had employed had argued, as their profession is wont to do, but one had a theory that the Undine was actually an avatar of the dungeon. As soon as the king had heard that, he'd known in his heart it was the truth. The spy's voice became lectury again. A vow is never to be taken lightly, much less the vow of a king. Breaking such a promise could have repercussions not just for him, but for the entire kingdom. A vow to the manifestation of a place of power, however, was another thing entirely. When it was factored in that his dungeon was linked to the vow as well, the scholars had no disagreement on this particular point. The king could not even consider breaking such an oath. This was the reason the king gave for stopping his adventurers from killing the Undine, though again, his friend tells a different story. I was told that the Undine smiled as she walked closer and then pronounced, "I see you have learned some small amount of wisdom since our time together." Then she handed him the bundle and made him repeat that he would honor the vow. "And?" Randolph Phineas said, placing one hand on his chest. "He did."
"You were the baby,"
Richter said, nodding as he digested the story. Only silence surrounded them. He wasn't exactly sure how he felt about the tale, but he was happy he was finally getting to the truth. As he thought about the story, a question occurred to him. "If it was the current king's grandfather that sired you, how old are you?" "I will celebrate my 109th year come Sanran, my lord. Now, if I may, I have a question for you." The two men made eye contact, and Randolph Phineas slowly stood. Richter matched him, at long last letting go of the dagger still under his pillow. It wasn't that he doubted the deadliness of the spy, but he just didn't believe the man would attack him. Whatever else Randy was, he was a man of honor. As they stood to their full heights, Richter received another small surprise. The Chamberlain had always been a bit taller than him, but with the glamour fallen away, the Chaos Seed now overtopped him by at least 4 inches. Somehow, that didn't take away from the power or strength that the half-Undine exuded, though. Slowly, so that he didn't startle Richter, the Chamberlain took his pen and drew the point across the surface of his palm. Though his skin had a blue undertone, the blood welling was as dark red as any human's. The metal nib sliced through the flesh as easily as a scalpel, and Richter realized anew just how precarious his position would be if the spy chose to attack him. Randolph Phineas turned his hand to the side, and the blood began to fall in a slow pat, pat, pat onto the stone floor. "Twice before I have made a blood oath," Randolph Phineas pronounced. "Once to my father, I swore to never sit upon the throne of Eve and to forever serve his bloodline. I did so faithfully until the new king cast me from his service when he learned of my true lineage. With my father's flesh now turned to dust, I hold that oath fulfilled. My second oath, I cannot share with you, even if it means you cast me from your side. I would never have shared so much with you if I did not truly trust you, my lord. Even now, I cannot share that one truth. And yet, despite the fact you may kill or exile me, my third oath is this." Randolph Phineas knelt down and lay the palm of his bleeding hand flat on the stone. "I, Randolph Phineas, swear by my blood to the four powers embodied in this stone and to the universe itself that all I have said this night is true. I further swear that all I will say for the rest of this night will be true.
He looked up and made eye contact with Richter.
I believe in you. You have come far in the months that I have known you. Your decisions have both saved and cost lives, and each has weighed upon you. I have seen you evolve into a true ruler and know that you base your leadership not just upon the might of your blade or magic, but rather your ideals. Acceptance for all, increasing the power and level of those around you, and protecting those too weak to protect themselves.
A slight sheen of moisture began to cover Randolph Phineas's eyes as he continued to stare at the Chaos Seed. His voice took on the slight echo of power that occurred when the universe recognized and held to the words you would speak.
I believe in you, my lord. Know that, as I make this oath, by the power of my true name, by the lineage of my father, King Philippe III, and my mother, the Avatar Undine, I formally swear allegiance and loyalty to you, my lord Richter. From now, until my very death, I will protect you and your interests to the best of my ability and without deceit. Will you have me?
The air stilled, and a feeling of great weight settled upon Richter. The eye of the universe looked down upon him, and the strings of fate drew taut as they awaited his decision. A pattern of importance would be woven into the skein of history tonight, and the tapestry would change based on his response. Richter felt the import, and yet still took his time to think. The spy had been right. He had learned the importance of words in the land, and he would not rush judgment in such an important moment. On the one hand, Randolph Phineas had deceived him. The man wasn't even human, and Undines weren't even a race he was familiar with. A half-elf, or even a half-orc, wouldn't be a person he would dismiss out of hand. But what if Randolph Phineas, Richter corrected himself again, thought in an alien way because he was half-elemental. Did that make him half-monster? Perhaps even more troubling was the second oath that the Chamberlain couldn't tell him about. It was more than just a small cause for concern. What if that oath was something horrible, like killing all humans? What if it was to infiltrate other villages and kingdoms, being loyal until he could sell them out to Eve? The man was a damn spy, after all. Not trusting him was kind of in the name. It was insane to Richter to even think about the fact that the word spy wasn't just a job description. Randolph Phineas wasn't just someone who relayed information. The fucking universe had assigned him that specialty. What did that say about him as a person? What did that say about the man's soul? Part of Richter itched to attack, if only because it was an easy and definitive option. His nerves were still raw from a day of battle. The short sleep had taken the edge off, but even with his belt of sustenance, he needed more rest. Yes, a part of Richter just wanted to take a potentially troubling piece off the chessboard. That made him think about how he really should invent chess in the land. It wasn't just a relaxing game. It was a great way to... The Chaos Seed shook his head. He was more tired than he thought if his mind could wander like that. Then his eyes narrowed. Or had he just gone off on a tangent because of some weird spy talent that the Chamberlain had purchased? Was he being manipulated? Was his thinking about being manipulated a manipulation itself, aimed at keeping him off balance? Richter stared hard at Randolph Phineas, then released his breath in a huff. He could go down that rabbit hole forever and keep falling. No, he had to focus on what he knew. What he knew was that Randolph Phineas had in all likelihood saved lives in the village with his contributions. The Chamberlain had made sure that hundreds of people had been fed, clothed, and sheltered for months. He had been a blessing to the Mist Village. There was also the point that Richter wouldn't even be facing this choice if Randolph Phineas hadn't decided to be honest with him. The man had shown him trust. It might just be the universe exerting its hidden rules, forcing the spy to come clean since their official relationship had improved from admiring to trusting. Even if that was true, though, it didn't mean that Randy's regret for deceiving him wasn't real. On the contrary, it might just ensure that the man was telling the truth. Of course, the most important thing was the blood oath. Richter had made one himself, and the consequences for failure were severe. His oath hadn't even involved calling on the universe or a place of power. Words had power. With what Randolph Phineas had just promised, Richter couldn't even imagine what the consequences of breaking such an oath would be.
He came to a decision.
Stand, Richter commanded. Randolphinius did as he was told. Standing now, the blood from his hand continued to fall to the floor. Pat, pat, pat.